Welcome to Fried. I'm your host, Kate Donovan. I work with leaders so they can see the patterns that are quietly hurting performance and burning out their best people. In my world, burnout is blameless, burnout is information, and burnout is a signal that we can use to improve workplaces. Seasons 1 through 10 focus on individual burnout. Seasons 11 and beyond focus on leadership, culture, and the workplace. This podcast will help you understand what burnout is pointing to and how to start fixing what's actually causing it. If this is a conversation you feel your organization should be having, that's the work I bring into teams through keynotes, workshops, and advisory. You can find all my info at katedonovan.com. That's CAITDONOVAN.com.
Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Got each other on our side, plus all the folks at Fried, the Burnout Podcast.
Fried fam, yet another person came into my life in a weird way. We were both invited to be part of a live podcast recording, and we were ready to go. And then Rachel, life happened. We'll get to that, right? Something happened, something came up last minute, but we connected on that day and we've been trying to sort of like make things work ever since. And now we are here. So Fried fam, today you get to hear the wonderful, actionable advice of Rachel L. Goldman, PhD, FTOS, FAS, MBS.IH. We could also just call her like Dr. Rachel. She is a clinical psychologist, author, and speaker known for her holistic approach to health and expertise in CBT, which is cognitive behavioral therapy. She specializes in stress reduction, disordered eating, health behavior change. You know, I love that. And is a clinical assistant professor at NYU Grossman School of Medicine. A trusted media expert featured in the New York Times, Time, CNN, and more. She has also shared the stage with Oprah. Pause for dramatic effect, and is often a go-to expert for major platforms. Her upcoming book, When Life Happens, that was a really fast callback, everybody, will be published April 2026, coming out right now, soon, pre-order. Do the thing. Click the buttons. Rachel, welcome to Fried.
Amazing. Thank you so much. And I am just so honored to be here with you today. I still feel so badly about that day. And we are going to do another live in person another day, but I'm so glad to be here with you today. So thank you.
Yeah, I'm so glad to have you. So one of the things that you said in your form was that you actually had your own burnout story in 2016, which was same year as me. It feels like a whole different life.
It definitely was another chapter for sure.
Yes.
Completely different phase, a different chapter.
What do you
remember? I often forget.
From that? Yeah, right. Like, what do you remember from that time? Because we package it up in pretty bows sometimes after the fact. We're like, oh, I went through this thing and then I fixed it.
Yeah. No, it's so true. And for me, the time that I was working at a hospital, which I want to just clarify also, I am still affiliated with NYU and do academic work and trainings and teachings with their psychiatry residents. But I was at a different hospital affiliated with NYU for about 5.5 years prior to then. And it was just, it is like in my head, it's just like, oh, that time I worked at the hospital. And, you know, I think I, you know, the way I like to describe it is I think you come to a point, and it could be burnout in a job, or honestly, it could be burnout in a relationship. It could be burnout in anything. I almost feel like you come to a point where when it becomes burnout, it's like you're there and you're done. Like I'm done. Like you wake up one morning, and you're like, this is the day I'm submitting the letter. This is the day I'm breaking off the, you know, whatever. And because looking back, there were lots of ups and downs, you know, and again, I think we could even use relationships as a great example. You know, there's lots of signs, right? And then one day it's like, oh, I don't think I can do this anymore. And that was kind of me at my hospital job. It was a lot. It was my first, I guess, job as a licensed clinical psychologist after my internship, after my postdoc and everything. And it was amazing. And honestly, I still thank that hospital and the team for helping me get to where I am today, because I would not be where I am today without that experience. And in those 5.5 years, of course, there was amazing aspects of it. And it just got to be a lot. And I remember my husband you know, I probably would still be at that job if it wasn't for my husband, to be honest, you know, kept saying like, you need to leave, you need to leave, you need to leave, you know, like this isn't good for you. And I knew that. And it had to be the right time, but it became the right time when it was like, oh, today is the day when I'm like, you know, you like have that email saved in drafts and you're like, today is the day you're going to hit the send button. And I was just literally the definition of burnout, like emotionally, physically drained. I'm not going to say angry because I don't think I've ever been like an angry person, but all of those emotions, you know, like became irritable and just stressed to the nth degree. It was impacting several areas of my life and it just was not the place for me any longer. And actually, burnout aside, my boss at the time, when I had spoken to him, literally was like, I was waiting for this day. He knew that there was going to be a day that I was going to walk in his office and be like, I'm ready to move on. I'm ready for my next chapter, my next phase. And that's what I did. And actually, I didn't know what I was going to do at the time. I was kind of waiting to see once I knew what I was going to do next. I always knew, funny enough, I always had a plan that I would be at a hospital academic research or academic clinical job for about 5 years. And I was there for a little over 5 years. Maybe that was my sign. I should have stopped at five and not stuck around for the few extra months. But I always knew I was going to do that. And then I kind of was like, I don't know. Maybe I'll do my own thing. I'm not really sure. Again, my husband, thankfully, and I'm very fortunate to know this, you know, and to acknowledge us, that he really gave me that push and was like, it's okay. You don't know what's next yet. Like, let's figure that out, but let's get you out of there first. And that's what we did. And I started a very, very, very small private practice, very, very small, and then had my son, and then the pandemic happened. And then things in the mental health field, fortunately and unfortunately, kind of blew up. But that's kind of the gist of my story.
When you knew that there was a mismatch, a lack of alignment with the hospital job, did you know what the things were that weren't matching? Like, you did.
To be honest, I think I knew the day I took the job.
Do you remember any of them?
I'm trying to think of what I want to say and what I don't want to share just to keep kind of, you know.
Yeah, protect people.
But, yeah, and I'm still, you know, we're all in the same circle still. I mean, you know, I also specialize in, which it's not very specific in my bio, but I specialize in the treatment of obesity. Yeah. And that's a small kind of community when it comes to the healthcare world of people that are real experts in that area. And again, I adore the team that I worked with, but I think there was just a mismatch and there still is, I would say, in larger picture. I'm going to just say like, individuals who specialize in mental health and mental health professionals versus some surgeons or medical doctors. There's a little bit of a mismatch there to begin with. Yeah. And I knew that. I knew I was coming in already going to have to kind of really push and fight for certain things that I thought were important. Yeah. And that's okay. I mean,
it's just the way the system works. I mean, my first job, my master's degree is in acupuncture. I was a practicing acupuncturist for 17 years. My first job was in a Western fertility clinic, and I was the only alternative practitioner in the entire building. Yeah. So I also had to fight for everything. And then, you know, when we had like clear data that showed that my work in the office was useful because the pregnancy numbers for the entire clinic went up. When we had those numbers, the owner of the clinic came to me and said, I don't know that it's the acupuncture. I think just the patients really like you.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like,
you're like, that's it too. But there's evidence and there's research that shows that it's
like,
also acupuncture.
We have data. Like you have clear.
Yeah.
It's we did.
Yeah.
What? And I just sat there and I thought, wow, this is always going to be an uphill battle for me. And then everyone you meet because I'm not a doctor, I'm an acupuncturist, and everyone you meet, they're like, oh, does that work? And I say, no, I'm a charlatan. Like, don't you think if I was going to try and steal people's money, I would do it in a way that would get me richer faster? Like, this is not a great way to earn money.
Right. And you're working at a clinic also. Like, it's not like you were doing your own thing. What's wrong with that?
I did that too. I did that after, you know?
Exactly.
But it's just like such a wild place to be in the world of medicine is so hierarchical.
Yeah.
And you, the people on the bottom have to fight. And when you're in a hospital system and you are in the mental health department, you are on the bottom.
Yeah. And actually, I can really relate to your experience as well, because I was the only, the first and the only behavioral health provider / mental health provider in this department, because it was a surgery department.
Yeah.
It was bariatric surgery and, you know, filled with, you know, NPs, PAs, MDs, surgeons,
wonderful,
et cetera.
Good-hearted, lovely people.
Right. And we had an amazing team. And I was so happy to be part of that team, because the interdisciplinary team, multidisciplinary team was so important.
Yeah.
And so I could totally relate to what you're saying, because there just is a different viewpoint, different, you know, different goals in a way. We all had the same goal, but different in some aspect.
Yeah.
So yeah, it is. It is a constant uphill battle. And fresh out of grad school, I was ready for it. I was a bulldog. I'm like, like I was ready. And you get to the point where it's like, oh, I don't need to do this anymore.
Yeah. I don't need to prove myself to you. I don't want to have this fight anymore. I don't want to have this conversation anymore. All of the things.
Yeah.
So one of the things that is really important to me, I went backwards in my education. So I did a master's degree first and a bachelor's degree second. Long story. I've done many years of schooling to not have a PhD. And one of the things that I studied in my bachelor's, I did biobehavioral health, which is all the things, how stress affects all the things, neuroscience, psych, biology, genetics, epigenetics, epidemiology, all the things at once.
You're speaking my language.
It's a really cool program. At Penn State, it was amazing.
Oh,
I loved
great.
It. Let's talk about this concept of health behavior change in general. Because one of the things that I find in the burnout community is that people get to the point where they finally admit that they're burnt out. So we're not going to talk about that part. We're already at the part where somebody's like, okay, like I've gone through the shame, the guilt, the blame, the self-blame, the judgment, all the things around like saying this out loud, the feelings that I failed, whatever else comes up with the word. So many things come up with the word burnout. I've gone through all the things. I've finally decided I'm going to say it out loud, like admit that I'm burnt out. But then they are so tired. And their prefrontal cortex has shrunk. Their amygdala is hypertrophic. Their, you know, hippocampus is shrunk. Like they are not online. And then they have to make behavior change.
Yeah. So this is actually like the premise of my book, because what I talk about is the fact that we don't need an overhaul. We don't need to change everything in order to see change. And the problem is we as humans get stuck in this idea that I'm stuck and the only way unstuck is to do everything all at once.
Amen.
And actually that's what keeps us stuck is that thought process of I have to change everything in order to see a change. And really all we need to do is start with something. And I talk about it a lot in my book that I actually don't even like the word change. Mm-hmm. I like to use the word tweak because change, good change, bad change, any change is extremely overwhelming. Like if we have to change anything, again, even if it's a move, a new job, as positive as it could be, it is scary and overwhelming because we don't know what it's going to be like. That uncertainty, that unfamiliarity is actually really scary to our brains because our brains like familiarity. So I don't even like to use the word change. I like to think of it as what is one small tweak that you can make today? And when somebody is to that point, we can call it burnout, we can call it stuck, we can call it whatever we want to call it. That's all that we need to do because anything else is too overwhelming.
Yeah.
Right? Like we've had it. You're at the top and it's like, oh my God, if I have to do anything else, like I'm just, you know, you're already there. So nobody wants to add more to their plate. Nobody wants to completely overhaul anything. But we have to get out of that mindset that in order to see change, in order to feel better, I have to change everything, right?
Yeah.
So it's really just about taking a moment. And I love that you kind of were like, we're already at the point of calling it what it is. Because I was going to say, the first thing is just to identify it.
Yeah.
Like I'm stressed. I'm burned out. I'm exhausted. I feel stuck.
Yeah.
And then, okay, now what? Right. Yeah. Like yes. we can be there for as long as we need to be in a way, right? Like feel the emotion, do what you got to do. But at some point it's like, and now what? What's the next step? The literally step.
Yeah. So my people that have been listening for a long time are very well aware that I'm feeling extremely vindicated right now. Because I have spent 350 episodes telling people exactly that, what you just said.
Well, I'm glad that we're aligned. That's like, a good sign.
Yay. Yay. So the unofficial hashtag of the podcast is pee when you need to pee. Sometimes you have to start with a change that's that small and do it consistently and pay attention to your body in a new way that you haven't respected or built on before. Sometimes you just have to start literally with just don't write 3 more emails before you go to the bathroom.
Right. Just take that moment.
Just go.
Right. Just, and I, right. So there's two things that when you say that I think of, like that I often say, one is to pause and take that moment. And the other one I'm hearing, or rather I like to say, create that moment, create the time. Because everyone's like, I don't have time. I don't have time. I don't have time. Well, we do have time. We have to create it. And the other thing I'm hearing you say is something else I talk about in my book, which is that I say, Nike got it right. Just do it. Mm-hmm. Right. Like sometimes we need to stop thinking and actually just do it, which is actually called in CBT behavioral activation. So instead of waiting to tweak the thought, we can just tweak the behavior. We can just do it. So like, that's what I'm hearing when you say like, just pee, like, yeah. Just go to the bathroom. Just do it. Right. Yeah. Like, yeah. So, I love that.
So in the world of health behavior change, there's a few different theories of how that happens, right? What are the pathways and, you know, the extinction and the inhibition and all the things that happen. And for people that are like, well, I've tried everything and I still feel like I can't make any progress. I've tried all the things and I keep trying the things and I can't, I still feel stuck. What is your advice to those people?
Yeah. So what I would say to that is that's great. If you know, if you've tried everything or not great, right? Like, I'm sorry that you feel like you've tried everything, but I would say that sometimes it's about a mindset shift. Right. So there's, you know, like we could keep doing the same thing over and over again, right? And get nowhere. Where sometimes it's about taking that step back and almost like zooming out as opposed to zooming in, zoom out at the whole picture and think about what am I missing here? Right. So I often say that we need to check in with ourselves actually regularly, which is even more than once a day, ideally. And when we check in, I like to ask ourselves a few questions, or I like to inform people to ask themselves a few questions. One, and because we need a few, because which one's going to resonate with you, right? And one of them is, what is working and what is not working? And what do I need right now, right? So maybe for the person that is listening that feels like they've tried everything that's not working, you'd be like, okay, what is it that actually isn't working? And then what can we try that's a little different? And again, a little, right? Yeah. So we're not talking about a huge diet, for instance. And I love to use diets as an example, because to me, a diet, the definition of a diet is anything that is not sustainable. Literally, it doesn't have to be food. It can be anything. You're telling me you're going to the gym every day for 2 hours. That's to me is a diet. That is unsustainable. At some point, that's not going to work for you anymore.
Yeah.
So any kind of major life change like that, overhaul, that's overwhelming, not sustainable, it's a diet. So maybe we need to take a step back and be like, okay, what is the teeniest little thing that I can try today? And what often happens, and I saw this when I worked at the hospital, because I saw so many clients and patients in those years, what I often heard was people would come back and be like, I don't know what I did differently, but I feel different. And I'm like, all right, let's talk about what you are doing. And then I would be able to identify like, oh my gosh, you're going to bed 10 minutes earlier. Yeah. You know, whatever it was something small that actually had such a big impact, but they didn't feel like they were putting so much work and effort into it. Right. So I often think if we feel like we're putting so much work and effort into it, we're probably missing something, but it doesn't need to be hard. Life is hard enough. We don't need to make it even harder or add more to our plate. It is literally like, let me take an extra sip of water today. Let me go to bed 10 minutes earlier. Let me create that time to go to the bathroom, right? those things are really what's going to give us the momentum and propel us forward and keep us motivated to then add on to that, add on to that, add on to that in these teeny little ways that feel simple, but actually have a big impact.
Yeah. And I like starting with the question, what is working? Because sometimes we get into this, the like you're saying, this mindset where we're saying, well, nothing's working, nothing's working. Well, it's like, well, back up, Tina. Like, what if something is actually working a little bit? Like, what's something that's actually better now than it was a month ago? What's exactly. One thing that's actually working? Because we get into this, one of the almost like pre-existing conditions for burnout is black and white thinking, is all or nothing yes. thinking, right? Like people exactly. that have all or nothing thinking end up in burnout quite a bit. We talk about on the podcast, instead of finding the gray in between the black and white, we say find the rainbow. what's the rainbow between the black and white? Between the black and white? So this is one of the, I think, one of the biggest practices that you should be building however slowly you need to, as you come out of burnout, because the more you understand that it's never just this or just this, that's not even life. There's always right. a rainbow of options in between. As soon as you allow yourself to think that there's a rainbow of options in between, you start to see that there are more options. And then you can choose one or not.
Right. But what you're describing, you know, is it's that flexible mindset.
Yeah.
Right. Or I call it, and I talk about it in the book, as a growth mindset.
Yeah.
We have to get away from that fixed black and white, all or nothing thinking. And you're right. I say this all the time. There's always an option. And I actually, you mentioned your hashtag before. My jokingly hashtag is I make it work. Making yeah. it work is the hashtag. Like yeah. I literally am like, all right, that's not working. How am I going to make it work? Yeah. How is this going to work for me? What are my options? What can I do? But again, it all goes back to the mindset. If we are stuck in our thoughts that like it is either this or that, then we're probably going to be stuck, right?
Yeah.
But if I love that you said the rainbow of options. I really love that. But if you think, okay, what's the in-between?
Yeah.
Right? There's always another option. And sometimes, again, in order to get to that place, though, we have to take a step back. And sometimes we have to view what's going on from a different lens, right? We have to view it from this new way of thinking that is opening up possibility and opening up these opportunities, right? For instance, for me, when I was in the hospital job, it was like, okay, either stay here or I find another job. And usually I have a very growth mindset. And in that moment, my husband was like, well, what if you just quit and we figure it out? You know, that was that in between that I never thought of.
Yeah.
That, you know, again, it's, I don't always recommend doing that. I could in the moment, but you know, that wasn't an option in my brain at the time. Right. I was like, I got to figure this out. So here I am working these like crazy hours at the office and, you know, putting my resume together and sending it out and looking for jobs. Whereas he was right. He's like, take a month and do that, you know, figure yeah. it out. And that's what I did. But again, that's this idea of getting away from this fixed mindset, this all or nothing thinking, which is difficult. You know, I want to let people know that are listening too. Like yeah. it's not just boom, I wake yeah. up and now I'm going to.
Especially when you're burnt out and your prefrontal exactly. cortex is shrunk.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
When and or if you've been doing it this way forever, right? If yeah. that's the way you've been thinking, again, going back to diets, people that have been on and off diets their whole life have a very all or nothing thinking mindset. Yeah. So it's hard to get away from that when that's the way you've kind of been programmed in a way, like you've programmed yourself
yeah.
to think that way. But the great thing about the brain is that just as we learn things, we can unlearn them and relearn or learn new things. So we can reprogram our brain to automatically think in a different way, but it takes practice and repetition.
Yeah, we talk about that a lot on Fridays, being like as walking on the same forest path for or jungle path for 25 years. So it's clear. And of course, it's clear. Of course, you're going to go down that one most of the time because it's easy and it's clear and it's available.
And it's familiar.
And it's familiar. You know. Yeah. And then you have to get a new path and you have to start with like a machete, some really heavy hiking boots and all these extra resources to start getting that path free so that you could walk on it. But then you walk on it again, and then you walk on it again, and then you walk on it again, and then you, and all of a sudden,
that's the path you're taking, and that's the one you're on.
There's footprints, yeah, and exactly. you can follow them. And
I love
think that's so important to just know that most of it is just doing shit over and over again.
Yeah. And I love the example you just gave too. I love all your examples. It's like me. I love using analogies and examples because I'm going to tie it back to what I always say in a way. So the hiking boots, the machete, all those things, those are the tools.
Yeah.
And it's all about having the tools.
Yeah.
And I always talk about having a toolbox full of tools that you can pull from when you need them. But a lot of times it's just having the tools that you need at the time. Right. Because if you were to take that new path without those tools, not to say it's impossible, but it would be much more challenging. Right. Again, kind of taking that moment to pause and be like, what do I need right now? Oh, I need the hiking boots. Right. I need the tools. I need my support. I need, right. And the tools can be anything.
Yeah.
It can be our support person. It can be therapy. It can be, for me, running. It can, you know, like all different tools we need at different times for different things. But without the tools, it makes it really hard. And my book, actually, my goal of the book is to equip people with the tools to have for when life happens.
Yeah.
And if that even is the mindset to think, I got to go buy the hiking boots, right?
Right.
To think I'm going to take a different path. What do I need for this new path? And sometimes I figure it out. I make a mistake because we're human and we make mistakes. Yeah. And then I get the right tool the tool at this time. And I then move forward too.
Right.
But again, that's the growth mindset to think not that I fell and I failed, but, oh, I tripped. Let me get up and keep going.
And I didn't have the tool. Yeah. So folks, the book, the full title, I just want to read the full title. And then I want to tell another story because this is something that happens in burnt out brains a lot. But the full title of the book is When Life Happens, which alone is just great. But it's When Life Happens, the mindset shift you need to manage stress, build confidence, and break free. It's so freeing, the title. It's so expansive. And I love that. And so
if I told you about the night that we finally got that title, my husband and I brainstorming all these different ways and different things and how to run it by the editor and this and that. But I do love the title. So
yeah, it's great. It's great. So one of the things that I noticed about myself and then subsequently noticed about a large majority of the people that are in this community is that we have this idea that tools are cheating. So,
oh my God.
For example,
tools.
I know it's crazy to think about from today's perspective now that I see this, but I was doing a jigsaw puzzle and it was 1,000 pieces. And on the back of the jigsaw puzzle, there were sections and it was like A, these are all A pieces. And A was the top left corner and B pieces were the top right corner and C and D. And I put the whole frame together and got most of it done without looking at the letters on the back because I considered the letters cheating.
Mm.
And as I was doing it, this was way out of burnout. I left burnout behind a long time before I did this puzzle. And when I was towards the end, I couldn't figure some of it out. And then I was like, what am I doing to myself? And why won't I let myself just look at the damn letter? And so I sat with that for a little while and I came to this idea that it was cheating, that in some way it's like, you know, using the privilege or all of these ideas of if you're not working really hard at it, then you didn't really earn it and you can't really claim it. Can we?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Wow. There's a lot we could talk about here.
I know. Okay, but can we deal with that? Because that is a bullshit mindset.
Well, I'm not going to say that those words, but yes, we could say that that's a fixed mindset, right?
Sure.
That is a very fixed mindset. And it's so interesting because I love your examples. I love the example because I think so many people can relate to it in some way or another, right? Like here you are given, let's just use an example. Like you are given a contact number or say you're out of a job because you just were burned out and you left your job. And somebody's like, hey, I have this contact. They're looking for somebody. Send them an email. But you don't send them the email because you're like, well, why would I do that? Like, right?
I don't know this person. They can't help. Why should they help me?
Right. Or that's cheating.
Yeah.
Right. Like, oh, I'm not going to go through the normal process of submitting my resume and doing this and this and that. Mm-hmm. I can't do that. It's cheating. Right. So in today's day and age, however we want to look at it, there is help available, right? Yeah. In any sense, it could be the tool, it could be the contact, it could be the back of the puzzle. Help is available. And I think it is given to us for a reason, because we are not machines and we are not supposed to know it all and figure it all out on our own, right? We need the tools in life sometimes or all the time, depending on how we want to define tools, right? But I love your example because I hear the things like that so often, right? It's like, if I don't do it this way, the quote, perfect way, the right way, the way that it's been in my head forever, the expectations, the pressure, then something's wrong with me. I didn't deserve it. I didn't earn it, right? But that's so far from the truth, right? Like there is no quote, right way. There is no perfect way. And that's why I always say, like, I make it work. But how I make it work is not going to be the right way for you to make it work, because we all have different lives and different minds and different tools and everything. But we have to get away from that thought process, because I'll use your example as an example. How did it feel to, I feel like I'm putting the words in your mouth. Did you feel, I'll just say, I'll back up.
Yep.
Okay. When you were doing the puzzle and you got that part, how did it feel when you kind of got stuck? I didn't want to say stuck because I imagine you felt a little stuck, but
yeah,
how did
it feel at one point?
Right.
And I got to the point where the thing that I was feeling was annoyance that this thing that's supposed to be, I wouldn't say fun. I don't do puzzles for fun. I do them for, like, it gives my brain time to percolate a little bit. Like it, and it's not looking at a screen. It sort of like disrupts my day in a different way. So I got to the point where I was like, this is not supposed to feel like such a pain in the ass. Like, I'm not doing this to torture myself. Why am I letting this torture me?
Right. And exactly. I often say everything, just like every relationship, everything serves a purpose. And what I would say is, I'm glad you went there, because what I would ask is, what purpose does the puzzling serve for you? And what you just described is like your downtime in a way, like your time away from the screen, your like me time, maybe. It serves a very specific purpose.
Yeah.
Now, if you were like, the puzzle is supposed to be really challenging and I look, you know, I really want to make it a challenge and this and that, I'd be like, all right, so don't use the box.
Yeah.
But if this is supposed to serve a purpose of being your downtime, your me time, then the box, hence we can call it the tools, is actually keeping that purpose in the same purpose, right? But I think the challenge that you had of not using it and trying to fight back that resistance to use it actually left you with a completely different purpose of doing this puzzle. Like, it left you feeling like, all right, that was really hard. Or like, why am I doing this? And I wouldn't be surprised if maybe somebody in a similar situation would eventually throw the towel in and be like, I'm done with puzzling. It's too hard. I'm not going to do it because I'm not going to use those tools. And it's not serving the same purpose it was before. And that's okay, why I think when things are, yeah, go for it.
That's what matters.
Yes. Yeah. So that's what I was just going to say.
Yep.
Is I often say it is the thought that follows the behavior that is more important than the behavior itself. So did you finish the puzzle or not? It kind of doesn't matter.
Yeah.
What matters is how you think about it and what you tell yourself.
Yeah.
It is so easy to be like, this is too hard and stop. Or I feel guilty. Why did I do that? I feel shame. So again, if you're going to use the tools, except you're going to use them and move on.
Yeah.
But if you're going to use them and then beat yourself up over it and be like, oh my God, I'm a failure. Why did I do that? I cheated. Then actually, I would tell you, don't use the tool in that situation. It's not worth it, because you're going to hold on to that and carry it forward, as opposed to being able to celebrate the fact that you just finished a really challenging puzzle.
And if you find yourself, I would take that further, saying that in a lot of situations, well, I'm going to, you know, I'm not going to use the tool because if I use the tool, I'm going to feel shame or guilt or whatever. I would say that that's what therapy is for.
Yes.
Right. I would say go to, like, literally go to therapy, because you need to get to a point where you understand that using the tools that are available to you benefits everybody, not just you. Because when your life is smoother and better and your heart resonance is higher, when you go to the grocery store, you're spreading better vibes. So this is helpful for the world, for you to use the tools at your disposal for your benefit.
Yes, they're there for a reason, right?
So if you can't, because of the shit in your head, because I'm like Miss Hyper Independence, Gabor Mate calls it super autonomous self-sufficiency, which I think is so funny because it shortens to SAS, which I just think is hysterical.
I love that.
And I am Miss Hyper Independence. I know where it comes from. I understand the process. I know my family history. I get it. And I have to consistently, still years after burning out, get to the puzzle and be like, oh God, I don't have to do it like, Katie, you don't have to do it like this. Like, this is not, this is, you have another option here and you can make a different choice. But I still have to remind myself of that.
Yeah. And that's okay, because the key is how long it takes before then you do it, right? So for instance, when we feel an emotion or a feeling, for instance, like anxiety, right? Like, she's like, anxiety as an example. The goal isn't to eliminate anxiety.
Right.
The goal is to live in it for less time, right? So right now, like, okay, identify you're feeling anxious, and then what are you going to do with it, right? So if you're reminding yourself, that's okay, but are you reminding yourself for days before you finally do it? Or are you like, oh, right, I can use the tool. I'm going to grab it and end of story. Like, you're now using the tool.
Yeah.
Right.
And now I've gotten to the point where ChatGPT has given me tools, because I'm like, is there an easier way to XYZ? Because
ChatGPT is a tool, right?
Yeah.
There's some, I mean, look, I was one of those people that was like, I'm not using ChatGPT. Everyone's using it. I'm not using it.
Yeah.
Right. And now I'm like, great, there's this tool available and I can ask it questions. Like, today I had to order flowers for somebody and I'm like, great, please tell me a great florist in this area that, and like, identify some great floral bouquets, like something as silly as that might sound, but like, it's there for a reason. And that's what I wanted to say is, I think the reminder also, so when we have these unhelpful thoughts is what I call them, like, I should be able to do it without the tool. When we have these unhelpful thoughts, I like to then pause, and this is very CBT, examine the evidence. Mm-hmm. Who says you should be able to do it without the tool, right? Who is saying this? And then when we examine the evidence, to use your example, I would say, well, the tool is there for a reason, which tells us that the expectation isn't that you, quote, should be doing it all on your own anyways. Somebody created the tool and the key for a reason, right? It's the same as somebody asks you for help. I mean, asks you, do you need help? Can I help you? Well, they're asking you for a reason, right? We all need help also. But the tool is there for a reason. We can use it. And there's nothing wrong with that. But yes, we have to shift the way we think about it and get out of our own head and be like, there's nothing wrong with me if I use that tool. If anything, it's going to allow me to do what I want to do, either more efficiently or better or faster or not, right?
Yeah.
And if the tool was there and you didn't want to use it, what I would say is, if you enjoyed doing it and you weren't struggling or you didn't feel like it was such a challenge and you still got the same purpose of, this is my me time, I'm relaxed, then fine, don't use the tool, right? Like, we don't have to use them if we don't want to, but the idea is to know it's there if you want to use it.
Yeah.
And there are times that we need, I don't like the word should, but there are times that we need to or could benefit from using it as well.
Yeah. So my grandmother always made everything from scratch, especially baking. She was like a storybook. She was like not that tall, kind of wide, and spent all day in the kitchen. She had 19 grandchildren and all of
got
mailed our favorite cake or brownies to wherever we were living. Yeah. Like,
amazing.
Yeah. Amazing.
And that's her thing.
That was
like,
her thing.
You're not going to see that from me.
No, you're not going to see that from me either. But one of the things that I know that she did was when she makes made a very particular coffee frosting and made brownies all by hand, she never used a blender, a mixer. Mm-hmm. And now when I make those things, I also don't use a mixer. And I know that I'm choosing on purpose to not use the tool to then have a moment where I feel close to my grandmother. Not because the tool, I mean, if she could do it for 70 years without without using, with using just a fork, it's going to taste fine using just a fork. Like, I don't need to beat these eggs into submission. So there's this, like, then I don't use the tool, but when, as I'm not using the tool, I'm having a moment of connection with my grandmother. Right. And so I'm using, not using the tool on purpose for a very particular reason.
Right.
But I only do that with her recipes.
Right. And that's meaningful to you.
Right.
Right. Whereas somebody else that's listening, like, might not have that story and that connection with their grandparent. And they're like, I'm using the mixer. Yeah. Right. So that's such an important point, that even when we have the tools, we can choose to use them or not use them. And different people need different tools at different times and for different reasons, right? Like me, I'm going to go to that hand mixer right there. Well, to be honest, I'm not really a baker, so I'm probably not doing that anyways. But if I was, I would do that. And that tool would work for me in that moment, but it's not going to work for you in that moment, because now we're taking away that meaningful moment for you, that it's serving a different purpose.
Yeah.
And that's really important to remember. So, you know, I always get the question, like, what should be in my toolbox? And I always tell people, we got to think about what's going to work for you, because my tools may not work for you. And my tools may also not work in every situation for me, which is why we need more than one tool also.
Yeah. What are there, like, a, is there like a top five most common tools?
So yes and no. Okay. The reason I say it that way is because my recommendation is that we all have at least three tools in our toolbox. And the reason I say three is for the reason I said before, that not every tool is going to work for every situation. And it is important to have at least one tool that is internal. Mm. So when we're talking about tools, I tend to talk about, like, stress management coping tools. So it's great that I have, like, running in my toolbox, or I'm going to go outside and take a walk. But if the weather is horrible, I might still do it, but I might not do it. Or I'm about to step on stage to give some speaking engagement, or, you know, I have a speaking engagement. It is not realistic for me to just throw on my running shoes and be like, see, I'll be back in 10 minutes. Right, exactly. So that's why it's important that we also have tools that are internal, that we don't need anybody else for or anything else for. And those tools can be things like relaxation techniques, imagery, meditation, mindfulness exercises, breathing exercises, that nobody needs to know you're doing it, and you can do it like that in the moment. So to kind of answer your question, and to kind of not, I would say, no matter what your tools are, just at least have one that is internal. And then other common ones, I would say, are like calling a friend or talking to somebody, reaching out for that support. Some kind of movement, I think, is helpful to have in your toolbox. Getting fresh air, again, breathing. For some people, it's sewing, crocheting. For others, it's doing puzzles, right? Any of these things work great if they work for you. And that's really important, because the idea is, we want to practice them when we don't necessarily need them, so then we can pull from them when we really need them, without being like, oh, shoot, what was in my toolbox? What is my go-to? What do I do when I'm feeling stressed? I don't know. Or you don't want to start researching how to do diaphragmatic breathing in the moment if you've never done it before.
Yeah.
So practice, practice, practice. Repetition is so important.
Yeah. And so there's this, in the world of short videos on Instagram and TikTok, and, you know, like, quick ideas everywhere, I worry that I just, maybe I'll say it this way. I enjoy the fact that you're asking people to find their own tools, because in a world where there is so much noise about other people's tools, there's this strange internal belief that, like, well, if that tool doesn't work for me, it's because I'm broken.
Exactly.
And
I think I wrote something about that in the introduction, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah. See? About how, like, you know, we're all comparing ourselves to everybody. And if this worked for one person, but it's not working for you, people often feel like, what's wrong with me? Why is it not working? I'm broken, things like that. But no, we're all unique individuals, and we all need different tools, and that's okay. But we have to accept that, or we have to acknowledge that and accept that. And it's hard, right? Like, we all are bombarded with all of these messages. All that noise is everywhere. The comparison is real.
Yeah. So fried fam. If, and I say this a lot on episodes, but I want you to take a moment to soak it up again if you haven't heard it in a minute. No matter what we say on this podcast, and no matter how much time we've spent with patients and studying and doing all the things, if something that we say doesn't work for you, you are allowed to release it.
Yes. I often say you are the expert of you. I say this to everybody. Like, I may have the years of experience and things, but I learn more from my patients and clients than I probably did in any textbook. And you are an expert of you. If it doesn't feel right, if it's not going to work for you, don't put it in your toolbox. Don't do it. It's not going to be helpful.
Can we talk about the difference between it doesn't feel right and I'm just not used to this yet?
Yes. Yeah. So there's a discomfort when something is new. And there's a discomfort when maybe it doesn't work for us, right? So it can be a little tricky. But I think, again, it all goes back to taking that moment to pause and check in with ourselves. What am I feeling and what is going on right now, right? Do I feel this way because it's new and I've never done it before? Of course, it's going to feel weird and new and uncomfortable. But, or does it feel like I'm in pain, or I feel more anxious, right? There's a big difference there. And I think, you know, we want to try things more than once before we give up, right? But again, if anything makes us feel more anxious or in pain, that's a sign that, again, another reason that we don't slow down and pay attention is because our bodies are always giving us signals that we ignore. So that's a sign that you don't want to ignore, as opposed to, oh, this is new, let me try it again, right? It's almost like kids with eating. Like, I have a 7-year-old and a 2-year-old, so this comes up a lot. Like, they didn't like it today doesn't mean they're not going to like it tomorrow or next week. We want to try again, right? And that's the mentality that we want. We don't want to just throw the towel in because it felt uncomfortable.
Right.
Again, life is tough. Unfortunately, things are going to feel uncomfortable, but there's a difference between uncomfortable and I'm in pain, or uncomfortable and I'm feeling extremely anxious and this is unmanageable. Right. So it's hard to figure out, but what I'm going to do is turn it inward again on the person. Like, you need to know yourself enough. Is this just new, or does this really not feel good?
Yeah. Because if you're, you know, in the middle of a jungle and you're forming a new path with a machete and you've never used a machete before, like, that shit's going to feel heavy.
Right. Exactly. And that's okay. We can do it. Right.
Yeah.
And I think maybe one of the questions that help you figure that out is, do I see myself doing it again? Right. If, for instance, if you're not a runner and you want to go running today because you heard that I was a runner, but then you're like, I'm never going to do that again, then don't do it again. Right. Don't even try. Like, forget about it. But if you're like, oh, you know what? I'm not a runner, but maybe I want to start walking. Right. Like, how can you make it work for you is different. So if that newness, that uncomfortable feeling is like, I never see myself doing this, forget about it. But then how can I make it work? Or what is a better tool for me to try? And we can try different things, right? This is, again, why we want to take time to practice, because I want you to try different things. We don't always know what's going to work. We just don't.
Well, and different things work at different parts of our lives and different phases of our lives. Like you said, you have a 2-year-old and a 7-year-old. That's a different set of tools than before you had a 2-year-old and a 7-year-old.
Oh my gosh. Absolutely. I mean, right. We have to be willing to adjust. And again, getting out of that fixed mindset, we have to be willing to make those tweaks and adjustments. And that's really how I feel like we can really succeed in life in terms of living happier, healthier lives, is loosening up. Like, if we think about like having screws in our brain, we want to loosen them up a little bit. We want to be a little more flexible, not as rigid with that thinking.
Folks, When Life Happens, the mindset shift you need to manage stress, build confidence, and break free comes out next month. Dr. Rachel, do you have anything to sort of sum up our conversation so we can leave the readers with the impetus to go buy the book, first of all, and second of all, the impetus to maybe take one more step toward taking care of themselves today?
Yeah. So I, you know, I think if anything we talked about today resonated with anybody listening, like that's, you know, a sign to go ahead and get my book. It really goes into detail about all of the things that we touched on today and more. And my goal really is to equip people with those tools to not have to feel or get to the point of burnout, right? Or not get to the point of like, I am so stuck. I don't know what to do. And it all just takes starting with right now. Like literally, what can you do different right this moment that might get you to move one step forward, one baby step forward, right? No major changes, no major overhauls here. So I think, you know, I truly believe that we all have it within ourselves to be able to live the life that we want, although challenges are going to arise. And like I said before, life is tough, but we can do it. And it starts with that mindset shift and just taking action right now.
Fried fam, that is your cue. I'm pretty sure we gave enough examples during this episode for you to think, you know, I have been thinking about trying X, Y, or Z. So your job for this week is to go ahead and do that, whatever it happens to be. And if you want to try paying attention to your bladder and pee when you need to pee, I highly encourage that behavior as per usual. Dr. Rachel, thank you so much for coming, for being with us, for writing your book, and for spreading all your good wisdom and knowledge.
Thank you so much.
Fried fam, until next time.
Welcome to Fried. I'm your host, Kate Donovan. I work with leaders so they can see the patterns that are quietly hurting performance and burning out their best people. In my world, burnout is blameless, burnout is information, and burnout is a signal that we can use to improve workplaces. Seasons 1 through 10 focus on individual burnout. Seasons 11 and beyond focus on leadership, culture, and the workplace. This podcast will help you understand what burnout is pointing to and how to start fixing what's actually causing it. If this is a conversation you feel your organization should be having, that's the work I bring into teams through keynotes, workshops, and advisory. You can find all my info at katedonovan.com. That's CAITDONOVAN.com.
Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Ain't gonna burn ourselves out no more. Got each other on our side, plus all the folks at Fried, the Burnout Podcast.